So actually, from the time I submitted the abstract to today, the title of my presentation has changed a bit, and it's now called The Role of Environmental Parameters in Characterizing Exposure to Enteric Pathogens via Drinking Water in Urban and Rural Settings in South India. So I will not focus on the link between water and diarrhea as much, but on the role of weather in kind of determining proxies for this risk. Okay. All right, so I think most of you are familiar with this map produced by WorldMapper, and it's it represents the sizes of countries are scaled proportionately to their contribution of diarrheal cases in children under 5. And you can see that diarrhea is a big health problem in India. With that, India holds about 16% of the world's population and only 4% of its water resources. Most of the Indian states are experiencing physical or economic water scarcity, and the groundwater withdrawal are far exceeding the rates at which they can be replenished by the natural cycles. Since the 1970s, groundwater has been used unsustainably in India for irrigation purposes. And now the groundwater is largely, the withdrawals are largely unregulated because of private users. Due to this trend, the groundwater table is rapidly dropping in a lot of parts of India, including our study area, which is in the region of Tamil Nadu. And the levels of water contamination are very high. Coupled with this, an increasingly unpredictable weather events are happening, so it makes a lot of sense to study the impact of meteorological factors on this on water safety and on diarrheal disease. I don't know how many of you are familiar with the challenges of waterborne disease epidemiology, but the large majority of the studies don't find a link, and this is contributed to the multiple transmission pathways that are possible. The diversity of diarrheal pathogens that can be responsible for the illness, the nature of the outcome, the fact that it's often self-reported and it's also objective, and in the majority of the studies, the way the data is collected is that the household is interviewed about the disease in the household, and the water sample is collected at that same time, even though the exposure occurred a few days ago, so the timing of this makes the exposure assessment really difficult. So the opportunities in this area are proxies for water safety, and there's been a lot of researchers who have looked at this. And there are some indicator water quality parameters. For the most part, the classic indicators, bacterial indicators are still used, like fecal coliform and E. coli, but there's a lot of debate in the literature more recently on that. There are also other proxies that can be considered, and these are environmental risk factors in the indoor and outdoor living environments. And meteorological parameters can be some of those proxies or help enhance the utility of some of these other factors. So the research questions that I was trying to answer is on the seasonality in water quality in our study area, and the utility of meteorological parameters and their influence in the seasonality. And also, do the meteorological parameters have a bearing on the likelihood of water contamination from its source to the place where people are drinking it? So the study where the data set I worked with came from is called the Environmental Predictors of Water Safety in Enteric Infections in Vulnerable Populations. It's a collaboration between Tufts University, where I studied, and the Christian Medical College in Vellore, Tamil Nadu in India. It's a hybrid longitudinal cohort study, and the main goal was to examine environmental parameters that influence the rate of enteric infections and some of the differences that can be observed in the urban and rural communities. So this is a map of our study area. There are two geographically adjacent urban sites, Kaspa and RMP. The population of these sites is around 25,000. The primary source of income is unskilled labor. And the water provision is a municipal groundwater system that comes from a dry riverbed that you can see in the north part of the city. And the way the water is provided is through a public distribution system that is a street level taps. And depending on the season and precipitation patterns, the water is available between once every 2 days to once every 28 days. And at the time that I visited the study site, the water hadn't come in the public system for 2 months. So they supplement the water sources by providing water in tanker trucks and things like that. So that's actually one of the other challenges of doing this research, is that you can almost never be certain of where the water you're sampling actually comes from. So the rural sites are more more geographically separated. They're more less sparsely, more sparsely populated. The income is agriculture, and the water in these areas is actually it comes from nearby groundwater wells. So each one has its own system, and the water is provided for 30 minutes to 3 hours daily. So these are some of the data sources that I had available. We had meteorological data from only one weather station that was located in Vellore. There was the parameters that were available were temperature, humidity, and rainfall. There was also a water sanitation survey that also included some socioeconomic factors that was conducted at the baseline. And a lot of different variables were included in the survey that I didn't use for my analysis, but the only ones that I used were self-reported water purification, presence of latrine at the household, and household size. Water samples were also collected prospectively and systematically from the street level taps and also from household storage containers. And the parameters there were pH, nitrate, total dissolved solids, and total in fecal coliform. And these were determined by the capabilities of the lab that that we were working with. And the diarrheal disease cases were self-reported by the head of the household once a week. So this is just a brief summary of the community characteristics. Some of the things to note here was that the total number of public taps is much greater in the rural area, even though the population is less. So, and considering that water is available a lot more frequently there, the sanitation situation, the rural areas are much better off. And the same is true for the diarrheal cases, a lot more observed in the urban area than the rural area. So in my analysis, the first thing I did was assess the seasonality in each water quality parameter in each area in the public and private domains. I used harmonic regression for this, and to assess the model performance, I looked at the significance of the sine and cosine terms and the R-squared of the model. And also, I added some of the meteorological parameters to see if they improve the performance of the model. And for this, I looked at the current, for meteorological parameters, I looked at the current week measurement and the previous week to see if there was a difference in that. And for the second part of the analysis, in the I linked observations from same day observations from the street level taps and the household measurements, and did some spatial and temporal analysis on the likelihood of the contamination between the source and the household. And for that, I used logistic regression adjusted for clustering at the household level, because some of the observations over time came from the same household. So this is just a summary of the seasonality assessment. The colors in this graphic represent the R-squared value, or the percent variability explained by the model. And I defined 0 to 20% to be a weak seasonality, 21 to 40 moderate, and over 41 is strong. The amount of seasonality that was observed was roughly similar between the public domain and the private domain. The previous week measurements were more influenced the observations in the private domain more, whereas the current week meteorological measurements were more associated with the public domain. the nitrate exhibited the most seasonality. It peaked during the rainy season, and there the percent variability explained was about 75%. So this is just an example of how the meteorological parameters were associated with fecal coliform. There was a negative association with previous week maximum temperature and current week morning humidity in the household domain, and there was a positive association with previous week rainfall in the public domain. So this table looks at the correlation between the SAP and household paired measurements, which there were some assumptions in that. I linked the closest TAP to the household, and the measurements were done on the same day, but we actually can't prove that the household stored water was collected that day. So those are some of the limitations. There was a pretty high correlation for pH, nitrate, and CDS, which total dissolved solids, which are more stable parameters. But for very variable parameters, like bacteria, there was no correlation that was observed. And this table describes the direction of change between the TAP and household fecal coliform. So it basically, the trend is that if the water is fairly clean coming from the TAP, it tends to become more contaminated at the household level. And if it's very contaminated coming from the TAP, it tends to become cleaner at the household level. And this was observed in the meta-analyses that I've read. It's a pretty widely observed phenomenon. So in this table, I compared the influence of the water and sanitation parameters versus the influence of the meteorological parameters on the likelihood that the water becomes more contaminated at the household level. And none of the wash parameters were significant in my analysis, but in the urban area, the maximum temperature was positively associated with the risk of contamination, and rainfall was also positively associated with the risk of contamination. But this trend was not observed in the rural area. So some of the conclusions I guess we can draw from this is the bacteria are really variable, and in the literature there's really no it's very expensive to sample for bacteria and very labor intensive. So usually the water sampling schemes are not sufficient to characterize this variability, so you don't know if the change that you observe was actual contamination or if it's sampling variability. So it's very hard in that regard. So because of this, there are some other water quality parameters that are being looked at, like turbidity, chlorine residual, and hydrogen sulfide. People are looking at the association of these parameters that are more stable with the more classic bacteria indicator and hydrogen sulfide. TAP water quality measurements were exhibited stronger correlations with current week meteorological parameters and household with previous week. And one possible significance of a geographical location that may exhibit strong seasonality in the public domain, it may be that the water system is prone to contamination. And there was actually one area that did show this this trend with each parameter. So we're hoping to explore that in more detail. There was no correlation between TAP and household bacteria levels, which was expected because of the variability of the parameter and also the external factors that can contaminate the water at the household level. Even though we were not able to observe that in my analysis, I'm not saying that it's not the case. The fecal coliform reduction between the TAP and household can be explained by natural attenuation, and the increase could be wash-related behaviors, and in our study it was also associated with temperature and rainfall. So one thing that we were not able to do was to separate the effect of natural processes in the bacteria, the bacteria dynamic, versus the wash-related behaviors, because we didn't have controls that were subjected to the same collection scheme and the same storage practices. So the conclusion is that utility of indicator bacteria in waterborne disease epidemiology is strongly questioned. it may be useful to study a specific area and what specific pathogen is responsible for most of the cases in the area, and develop stable proxies correlated with these agents based on that. And improving the water quality is always a priority, but understanding the relationship between the meteorological conditions and water quality may help determine like an optimal time for intervention. And I would like to thank people at Tufts University, Christian Medical College, and WHO for contributing to this analysis and the funding organization.
I was interested to see that when the water quality is bad for the pump, it improves, and the water quality is good, it gets worse. But do they meet, or is it the case that when it starts off bad, it's still worse than when it starts off good?
That's an interesting question. I haven't looked at that, but when it gets worse, it's really bad. So the fecal coliform levels are like in the 3,000, and this is drinking water. So it's and because of other water quality characteristics, like maybe turbidity, there's settling going on. So it's expected that the water does get better as it sits in the storage containers.
But I say it doesn't matter what the water's like when it's cold.
Exactly. Yes, that's probably true.
And just a very quick question: how did you allow for clustering?
I used a mixed effects model with a clustering term. I have actually looked at the diarrheal cases. I didn't talk about the disease link that all the analysis that I've tried here, but I did use different statistical approaches like risk ratio, logistic and Poisson model, and mixed effects model, because our data collection was prospective for water quality and disease, so you could look at in the household when was the last measurement taken and how many days later did was there a case of diarrhea. I didn't find a link in any of the approaches. They kind of, using the different approaches, it changed the associations with other parameters, but the association with fecal coliform, the indicator, there was never one. But I also looked at the question that you are referring to: how did the disease incidence vary in the households that receive good water and becomes bad, or ones that receive bad water and becomes good? And there was no difference. So.
I was curious about the, you mentioned with the public water supply that bring a lot of the coliform. Do they treat to use chlorination or some kind of intervention?
They report to use chlorination in the system that's used in the urban areas, but and it was actually one of the parameters that was tested for, but it was always zero for residual chlorine. So I'm not saying that they don't, but maybe they don't use enough.